As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Soccer Show Weekend Review. We're looking back on a weekend where it wasn't quite to be for the USMNT, who took on Colombia in a game of mixed quality, but there were plenty of positives, and we don't need to vamp about the valuable lessons learned in this January camp. In England, we got the magic of the FA Cup, where Liverpool played Brighton and once again messed it up. And Wrexham almost gave Sheffield United a black eye on a day when co-owner Rob McElhenney was watching the Eagles fly. And on the continent, Juventus stumbled and Milan crumbled. Real Madrid were held and Bayern were nearly felled. And Napoli are flying high and dreaming thanks to a wonder strike from Victor Osimhen. Almost rhymes. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man whose idea of a great January camp is setting up a tent in the backyard, roasting some s'mores. Oh, no, that's my idea of a good January camp. Taylor Rocco, hello.
I mean, it could be both. I don't know. Maybe you do that in the stadium. There weren't that many people there. I'm sure you could have found a little spot where you could have set up a bonfire and roasted some marshmallows. Why not?
I'm sure California code would allow that in a stadium. Sure. Yeah,
you might not be allowed to have a fire period in California. So never mind. I take that back. Don't do that. That might get you in trouble.
Well, joining us, Taylor, a man who might have the answer to that question, fire codes and otherwise, Joe Lowry, how's camping in California been for you?
It was good. It was really, really nice. I ended up not being able to make it out to that game against Colombia, but still really enjoyed being there and getting to cover the team in person and get to put some, it's not faces to names because you still know the players and you know the coaches and you know all these figures, but to be able to interact with those people a little bit. I do have some bad news for both of you. I don't know about California fire code, so I can't answer the s'mores question. I really apologize.
Oh, dear. You got to watch out for the bears when you're camping there. That's all
you
I
do.
Know.
You do. You really, really do.
Yeah. Well, Joe, you didn't make
it. I remember a park ranger once told us that in Yosemite that the like line between the smartest bear and the dumbest tourist was pretty like straight across, so they had to think about how to make their stuff like bear safe but also still allow for tourists to operate it, and it was a really difficult task apparently. So yeah, I take your point, Ryan.
Wow.
Hang on, what are we making bear safe now?
Oh, just anything in general. I think it was the trash cans that they still had to be functional, but like if they made them too complicated, the dumbest tourists might not know how to throw things away, but bears could get into them too easily. It's a delicate balance. It's a delicate ecosystem of dumb tourists and smart bears.
So there's a little Venn diagram, and the bit in the middle is very small.
Yes, exactly. Homer Simpson is, I think, the overlap.
Very good indeed. All right, plenty to talk about from this weekend just past. Joe, why don't we start off? I'd like to know how your experience was with this January camp. I believe you went to some training sessions. You didn't make it to the game at Carson at the weekend, but you did. You're one of the small subsets of the human existence who went to the other game.
It's true.
So, yeah, tell us about your experience.
I like being one of like 11,500, whatever that number was. Wow, I didn't realize that I could be part of such a small percentage of the population. No, I mean, it was great. This is a low-stakes camp. It felt like a low-stakes camp. There wasn't a lot of media there. A lot of outlets didn't send people to cover it in person, so I was glad to be able to be there and get to observe the beginning. What really is interesting, I think, about this camp in particular, more so than past January camps, which sort of rightfully get a shtick. They all have value, but they're also not like the biggest thing that's going to be on the USMNT's calendar. Though there were a couple of unique things here. The first one is this is the start of a new World Cup cycle. That game against Serbia was the team's first time on the soccer field since the World Cup. And a couple of those players were in the World Cup that we saw play at Bank of California Stadium, BMO Stadium, newly named.
Get it right, Joe. Get it right.
I know. How am I going to get my MLS show money if I keep screwing these things up? The other aspect here is like this was a January camp roster filled with a lot of new names. There were a bunch of uncapped players, eight Olympics eligible players for next summer. There are a lot of players in here that could actually help build out this U.S. team over the next 3 years. So that for me was probably the most interesting on-field angle here. You got to take everything with a grain of salt, but seeing a number of different players that Taylor and I, you and I talked about last week, and maybe we'll talk some more about different players and maybe even some more of those same players here on this show. But seeing those players up close and in person, I think was helpful for me ahead of a new World Cup cycle.
Taylor, before we get into the action on the field and maybe talk a bit about the players who got their game time in this most recent friendly, can you sell me the idea of this window? This is a non-FIFA window. So as a European seeing this window, I particularly in a cycle where there's not a permanent manager, what can one learn from this? Because I look at a window like this, if there was an England equivalent and a lot of the players who were in the England team don't go to that camp, I would say, why have that camp? What is the value? Can you sell me on this idea?
No, that is my answer. I can give you reasons why I think it can be interesting. I do not think I will be able to sell you, Ryan Bailey, on this camp. And I think a lot of people that is the same, because it's not like the first team. It's not even maybe the second team. It's maybe not even the third team. And it's not the permanent manager. And I think that is a big difference in past iterations, especially Greg Berhalter's first camp. It is the January camp, and it's when we get to see an idea of what his team is going to look like, what some interesting wrinkles are going to be. That's where we have Nick Lima being a secondary central midfielder when the U.S. is in possession, and we just start to see some new things. Whereas with this camp, we're not really going to get that. Joe and I talked about it, the Serbia game, and I think I equated it to the Dave Sarakin era when he was the interim manager for a year, and it was sort of seeing new faces, seeing some familiar faces brought back in and getting opportunities. But for the most part, I think it's just a chance to get new faces into camp, get them some minutes together, get them to experience what it is to play for the U.S. There's a couple dual nationals in here who could still go the other way. And so I think it's all just sort of getting reps, getting minutes, putting some people in the shop window, cough, cough, Matthew Hoppe. But for the most part, no, I don't think it's going to be a thing that will make somebody watch this game and come away thinking, yep, this is the national team for me. This is the exciting game I was waiting for. I think it's if anything, for me, it's a nice way to watch the U.S. in a sort of relaxed way. It's not a World Cup qualifier. It's not building up to a World Cup. It's just sort of interim manager, new faces. Let's see what happens. And I think the answer is not all that much. We had some, I wouldn't say even say standout performances. I think we had some good performances, some expected performances, a few names that I think we will continue to see, a few names that maybe need some more reps at club level or just need to kind of develop their game a bit more. But I don't think, Ryan, I'm going to be able to sell you on it because I myself am not entirely sold on it. Well, Joe, I think, is a bit more optimistic about January camp than I.
I am a little bit, especially when it comes to this camp. So this is one of those cases, Ryan, where I don't even think we can compare the U.S. and England. So my question for you, Ryan, how many spots do you think are up for grabs in any given important international window on England's roster? Right. So let's figure it's a 26-man roster.
Yeah.
What, I mean, 20 of those are filled and you feel confident about? What is that number?
Two or three.
Okay, so two or three are available. For the U.S., I would argue,
I thought you were saying two or three you feel confident in.
No, I'd say, I'd say there were two or three slots where you have...
Jude Bellingham are the three that Ryan really likes.
Those are the three.
The U.S., I would argue, at least half of the squad, like 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 players. Maybe the U.S. has 10, 11 core players that you feel really good about. That's why I think this is different and adds more value for a program like the U.S. and like a mid-major on the international level than it does for England, who is very much like the Kentucky of basketball. Maybe not Kentucky, maybe that's a bit kind to England. But you get the idea, there's differences here. The U.S. needs to have chances to find and identify players that can help build out that core. And so that's why I do think this is really valuable. And the other part that I appreciate about January camps, Taylor, you mentioned it almost as an aside, but I think the dual national thing is really very real. For the U.S., Brandon Vasquez in this camp's a dual national, has real ties to Mexico, like his family growing up watching Mexico play, watching Liga MX every weekend. That's the kind of tie we're talking about here with a player like Brandon Vasquez. Alejandro Zendejas plays in Liga MX and has played for the Mexican national team. Having a pretty low-key, relaxed camp, this sounds silly, but having a camp like this to just let guys hang out and be guys and enjoy spending time together playing soccer, I think is super valuable. So that's the other aspect here besides just like the U.S. needs good players and maybe this helps them find good players.
Okay, I guess I get your point there, Joe, but I guess the point I would make is how and giving these new players and filling these slots is important. But when you're playing against, say, a Colombia side, 19 of the 20 players had less than 4 caps. You're playing against sides who are also putting out not so strong lineups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you learn if those new players you introduced to the environment aren't playing with the regular USMNT players and they're playing against the weakened side as well? That's where I struggle to see the value, I suppose.
Sure. And that's where we have to take a lot of this with a grain of salt, right? I think that's a totally fair criticism, and it's a reminder not to anoint anyone or to write anyone off after these January camp games, because the U.S. players, like you said, aren't playing with the best of the best, so they're probably not going to look as good as they could or really stand out like a sore thumb in the same way that they could. And the same is true for the other side of the field. So, yeah, I'm not really going to disagree with any of that, but I think this is one of those cases where you do look for players that stand out. You do look for players that are a level above or have a set of good moments, and then you still keep all the caveats in the back of your head. And like I said, you don't anoint anybody off of these games.
Yeah. Joe, I was talking to a buddy of mine who was asking, like, if we should be concerned about these results. And I was saying, no, definitely not. And that if you want a comparison, I said it was Alabama and Georgia. But I would now change that to it would be like if you had the recruiting class of Tennessee playing the recruiting class of Vanderbilt in, like, a preseason game just to see, like, who's, like, the next potential quarterback a few years from now for some, like, decent but not great college football sides. Like, that's what I think these are. It's sort of who might be the ones to step up, who might we see in more camps, who can sort of rise above the rest at that same level. We're going to talk about Arsenal Man City later, and that's one where I feel like you had two incredibly good teams, and they sort of balanced each other out. If you have two sort of mediocre versions of their national teams playing each other, you get to see who can stand above that mediocrity. And the answer was a couple people?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I like, Taylor, I love that analogy with Tennessee Vanderbilt. The only other thing I can think of is the East-West Shrine Game, which is like random college players that are maybe good enough for the NFL playing against each other before the draft. That was a deep cut that I had to dig way back into my memory banks to pull out. But yeah, I think that's a fair comparison here.
Ryan watches that every year. It's his favorite game.
I saw an advertisement yesterday for an NFC-AFC flag football game next week.
I think like the new Pro Bowl. I think that's the new Pro Bowl.
God.
I'm not entirely sure, but that's basically what the Pro Bowl was before. So maybe now they're just leaning into it.
Goodness me. All right, let's talk less about that. More about US nil, Colombia nil. I should have mentioned the scoreline earlier probably in this podcast, but here we are. 27,000 sellout in Carson for this one. Let's assign some thumbs to this game in this window, Joe. Obviously, no wins in this January friendly series, but we don't ascribe too much meaning to that, do we? So where do we place our thumbs on this overall window? I've got a feeling it's going to be turning to the sky for you.
Yeah, I do give my thumbs up to this January camp in particular. I think pretty much all of the objectives were accomplished on the field and in camp. So we got to see some dual nationals involved. We saw Alejandro Zendejas against Serbia. We saw Brandon Vasquez in both games. Those are the two probably highest profile Mexican-American dual nationals that are up for grabs. Is kind of a weird way to say it, but you get the idea. We got to see those players, and I think both played well, so that's big. And then we did get to see a lot of young players that could help build out the core, so I've kind of set all my thoughts on that. To look at this game in particular, though, I do want to give some thumbs up to specific players. Brandon Vasquez comes off the bench in this game. He comes on for Jesus Ferreira in the second half. He doesn't get another goal like he did against Serbia, but he consistently found good spots yet again in the box. Matthew Hoppe was on the left wing. Thumbs down to him, because Hoppe had the ball a bunch and almost never found the right pass into the box. Brandon Vasquez was getting goal side. He was getting in front of defenders in the box to really provide his teammates with good passing options and windows to get him the ball, to get him a shot on goal. And that stuff just wasn't happening. But overall, Taylor, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. Brandon Vasquez or other players that you thought impressed in this Colombia game? Because I do think there were a few that stood out.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Vasquez scoring right there. Any number nine scoring intentionally looking in your direction, Haji Wright, I think I'm going to be excited about. But then also, I think Jesus Ferreira. Joe, I feel like you got some flack for saying that we saw the importance of Jesus Ferreira and why he will continue to be involved. He plays in this game, gets 63 minutes, doesn't score, but is exactly what we expect from him when he's playing for the U.S. He's facilitating attacking play. He has that great moment in the first half, I believe, when he receives one sort of in a little amount of space and turns and plays forward, and it's a great ball in for, I believe, Hoppy, who shoots wide. But those sort of moments where he's facilitating attacking play, he's moving off the ball, I think that was the thing we didn't see much of against Serbia. We saw a little bit better against Colombia, and I thought he was a big reason why there was slightly more off-the-ball movement. So I think Jesus Ferreira continued to do some of the things we've come to expect from him. Not scoring goals, that would have been nice to see, but I still think he is going to be an important part of the U.S.'s attacking plans.
I think he'll still be in this pool for sure, and that's basically what I wrote, is it's not time to toss Jesus Ferreira out the window. It's a new cycle. Brandon Vasquez is the shinier number nine right now of the two of them. But I mean, my notes for Ferreira in this game against Colombia, not exhaustive, but here's a lot of what I wrote down. 12th minute, good ball to Areola, who can't control it. Then I have good pressing. Then I have 17th minute, wins foul dropping in during buildup. 30th minute, fantastic drop and touch to Aronson. 32nd minute, great ball to Hoppy. I think that's the one you just talked about, Taylor. 44th minute, good forward pass to Areola. I mean, he was influencing the game. He was pulling a lot of the strings in the attack. That's nothing new for Ferreira against this level of opponent. And that's what I qualified in what I wrote for Backfield after this game, is Ferreira can do a lot of good stuff against teams like this and in games like this. This match against Colombia was very stretched. It was fairly open. That's a good one for Ferreira to drop in, to find space between the lines and to pull the strings. I'm not really convinced he can do it at the highest level. I think we need to see more. We need to see him improve. But he's still young, and giving him chances with the U.S., maybe not as a starter, but as a spot starter and an occasional contributor up top, feels good to me going forward.
Yep. I liked Walker Zimmerman on the ball in this game. I still think there's a few little defensive moments there. Aaron Long had significantly more bad moments, I think, on the ball and off the ball. But Zimmerman, I thought his distribution was pretty good, especially vertically. He goes long for Hoppy in the first like 5 minutes or so. Hoppy chests it down, lays it off, and the shot goes, I think, right at the goalkeeper. But it's a creative shot from Paxton Aronson, but I thought the ball from Zimmerman was good. He has a few more inside the first 30 minutes where I think his distribution is part of why the United States was able to make Colombia a little bit uncomfortable. I still think this game was sort of, as I agree with Joe, it's kind of open, lots of turnovers, but I didn't think it was particularly exciting from end to end. But I thought Zimmerman's distribution was solid enough, and he doesn't get megged on a free kick for a goal. So that's, I guess, a positive improvement. But Paxton Aronson is one that I feel like will get a lot of coverage because of the game he had. And I would like to give Anthony Hudson, interim manager, credit for not playing Paxton Pomacall, so I don't make nearly as many Paxton Pomacall, Paxton Aronson mistakes as I would otherwise. But I thought in this game, I really enjoyed the energy, the enthusiasm, the willingness to take people on, the willingness to try stuff. I don't know if it always came off for Paxton Aronson. I don't know if he had the physicality necessarily to be able to do that. So I liked the intent. I don't know if it was maybe efficient enough, Joe.
Yeah, I have thumbs middle to Paxton Aronson because
I had a feeling.
He did a lot of good stuff, right? I mean, he was getting in the box. He has two shots in the first half. I think two shots inside the first 15 minutes. I don't really ding players for shooting and missing. Like, maybe that's me being stupid, but I value getting into good spots way more than I do what happens after the ball leaves their foot and heads towards the goal. I think Paxton Aronson did a really good job of arriving in the box. I think he had some smart touches to kind of bail out his teammates after they put him in bad spots. There's a moment in the fourth minute where Kellen Acosta plays him a ball, and that really is, it's not a full-on hospital ball, but it's not a great one either. And Paxton Aronson helps sort of take a clever touch and get them out of a tough spot there. I liked all that stuff, but I mean, my notes after like the first 15 minutes or so are pretty much all just Paxton Aronson muscled off the ball. 19th minute, muscled off the ball. 30th minute, muscled off. I mean, that was happening over and over again in this game. It's not an indictment on Aronson's potential or his skill or any of those things. it's just a reminder that, I mean, he's a teenager. He seems incredibly mature in pretty much every aspect, but physically, right? Like, he's just not well built enough yet to really hang in there with a team like Colombia, who doesn't have a lot of internationally, who didn't have a lot of internationally experienced players on the field, but is still a good team. I mean, we're talking about Cucho Hernandez in this lineup. He was in the Premier League like a year ago, whatever it was. Plays for the Columbus Crew. Chicho Arango, who plays for LAFC and is in the Colombian national team setup on a somewhat regular basis. They have bodies. They have some strong players in this team. Aaronson couldn't keep up. I think it's not a surprise that Eintracht Frankfurt let him come back outside of a FIFA window for this camp. They don't think he's ready physically for the Bundesliga either. So it's just going to take time with Paxton Aaronson. It's not that he's not a good player. I think he's got tons of potential, but I think really we won't see a ton of him on the field in Germany this year. It's probably going to be more of a next year thing after he's had a full preseason and an offseason to sort of build and bulk and do all that kind of stuff.
I think if I had to criticize Paxton Aaronson, it would be the spelling of Paxton and it being different to Paxton of Pomacle. Having two different spellings of Paxton in the same setup is, I don't approve.
It's unkind to all of us who write about this team, I will say. I mean, it really is just not good.
Mm-hmm. His parents did it because it's Brendan too, right? Brendan with two E's instead of an A at the end. I think they liked the modern names, but with a little twist on them.
Well, and how dare the Aaronsons not check in with the Pomacles to see, okay, your future kid national teamer is spelled like this. Okay, we should copy. I mean, it's just unbelievable lack of coordination on their part.
Yeah, both first names end in Ian and both second names end in Owen for the Aaronsons. That's crazy. Wow. Symmetry. Wonderful.
January camp.
This is where we have arrived at. Yes. Let's take a quick break. We come back a little bit more on this game and the camp before we move on to the FA Cup and all the action on the continent. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. We are talking USMNT January camp. Taylor, having fun?
Oh, so much fun. And I actually am. I enjoy talking about the US in any form. So too does Joe. Ryan, I would say, is being a very good sport. And we're recording this. Obviously, we're capturing the audio, but we can see each other with the video. Ryan has been more engaged than I would have expected. Here is my question for you both. So my understanding of like the classical idea of hell, which is, you know, obviously where this conversation was going to go, is the idea that like the punishment is appropriate for whatever your sin may have been. So if you were a glutton, you're like starved. There's the one Tantalus like fed his son to the gods in a feast, so he's like starved and can't have water. My question with that in mind is, would Ryan Bailey's punishment in hell be to have to talk about January camps like really enthusiastically? Would it just be watching the US play meaningless friendlies while there's maybe more exciting soccer on? Is that what it would be for you, Ryan?
I think what it would actually be, Taylor, sincerely, it would be watching international soccer outside of a tournament, whether it's England, whether it's US, whether it's anybody. It doesn't get me going.
And I think with the extension that it's always sort of like, oh, we're going to get back to like the Premier League season tomorrow, but tomorrow
but it never
arrives.
Comes.
It's just always international football over and over again.
Can I be a small part of Ryan's existence here?
Yes.
Can I be like in the corner typing over and over again, Charlotte are going to win the wooden spoon, Charlotte are going to win the wooden spoon, Charlotte are going to win the wooden spoon. That would really like complete this picture. Plus, I want to get involved. I want to help.
See,
out.
I like that idea. I also like the idea of you or of a parody of you, a version of you, Joe, taking frantic notes about games that Ryan could not care less about. And I think that also would be like, why? Why are you taking these notes? I have to know. Like,
and the Lulu sites down at the same time as well.
That's, oh boy, no! If we're gonna rewrite Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot, I think it would based around meaningless US friendlies and the Premier League that never comes around the corner.
Joe, as you said, as we've said, we're going to talk more about like stock up, stock down, individual performers. But I did want to ask you about Eric Williamson, who starts this game, only plays a half. That's one that I know you have been excited about or had a you've been like, if not leading that hype train, you've been on there. You've been a passenger.
Sure.
Did those 45 minutes make the difference for you?
They didn't make the difference for me because I don't think it's enough to really fully tell. But I've been in the camp that says Eric Williamson probably should have been getting looks for a while now. Once he's healthy, I know he gets injured and hasn't been playing a ton with Portland, but did get healthy towards the end of last season. It would have been great to see him at the World Cup. And I thought he was good against Colombia. That's just not really enough to get me all the way there. 12th minute, draws a good foul on the right side. You could see him wanting to combine as the first half wore on, has a good ball to Areola in a tight spot in the box in the 14th minute. There's a bunch of these sequences. Has a good through ball to Areola right before halftime, and that's when he comes off. Areola draws a foul in that sequence in the 45th minute. I really liked what Eric Williamson brought. I liked what he did in this camp really across both games. It's more of like reinforcement, I guess, of what I already thought, rather than, oh my goodness, this is the thing that wakes me up to Eric Williamson, because I'm not sure he was like that good across these two games, or certainly against Colombia.
And then one more tease for tomorrow. Matthew Hoppe seems to have, I don't even know if it's like polarized opinion, but it seems to be one that I saw a lot of like Hoppe is washed tweets and a lot of people who were frustrated by his performance. He doesn't seem to have gotten the best reviews, but from the attention I paid to this game, and I'm going to watch it again, which is going to be super fun, but he seemed fine. So, Joe, I would like to know, like now, are your thumbs up, down, or middling for Matthew Hoppe, and then we can maybe reevaluate tomorrow?
They're not up, and they're not middling. I can table my Matthew Hoppe thoughts till tomorrow. Let's just say I think there is a fantastic beach soccer career ahead of Matthew Hoppe. I think that's good for me.
That's the meanest thing I think Joe has ever said about a U.S. player.
I really didn't feel good about saying that, to be honest.
I mean that in the sense that like even that is not that mean. Like it's still a very nice way of phrasing it. It's like David Wallace talking about Michael Scott. I mean, like, what do you want? He's a nice guy. No, I wasn't considering him. Like I think you did that very diplomatically, Joe.
Well, bear in mind, Taylor, Matthew Hoppe has to live in Middlesbrough, where beach soccer sounds like a pretty idyllic dream, I would imagine. So
Atlanta United almost signed Matthew Hoppe. Never mind. I can't do this.
Let's not do this then. Let's park USMNT chat for Tuesday's Total Soccer Show. Do tune in for that, listener. Plenty more to come on that one. Why don't we turn our attentions to the magic of the FA Cup? Plenty of drama in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Should we start off with a little chat about the biggest team of the weekend? Wrexham, of course.
I knew we were doing this.
Of course we're doing this. Of course we're doing this, Taylor. Wrexham 3, Sheffield United 3. So there was a lot of interesting debate around this game, Taylor. Full credit to Wrexham, by the way. A very, very exciting game. Kept it going right until the end and very nearly. It almost felt like they did deserve the win and they got it snatched away for an equaliser going to a replay at Bramall Lane in, was it, eight or nine days' time? But there's a lot of debate about people talking on the Twitters and the socials about, oh, why are you so invested in this Wrexham team, American fans? There are MLS teams on your doorstep, don't you know? And it's a little bit tiresome, that conversation, isn't it, Taylor?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, the answer is because two celebrities bought Wrexham. Like, that's why. There was interest in Miami for many, many years before they were even a team because David Beckham was going to be the owner. I think that's always going to turn some heads. And when it's I love of the ownership group, Rob McElhenney is my guy. But when it's Ryan Reynolds, who is like famous for being charismatic, I think he is also going to get a lot of attention. When Blake Lively is tweeting about her husband washing Wrexham, that's going to get a lot of attention. And so I think with that in mind, it's not surprising that so many different people were interested in this game. But I also think, like, you can have that criticism if you want to, but this is a Wrexham team who are trying to get into League Two. That is their dream. Playing a team who are in, second place in the championship, seem likely to make it back to the Premier League. like 78 something like that places between them in terms of the ladder in English football. And so that Wrexham, by all accounts, Ryan, I watched like a good chunk of this game, not enough to feel like fully informed on it. By all accounts, Wrexham were the dominant team, especially after the red card in the second half. If anything, it's shocking to me that a team that were 1-0 down and had like their two center backs go out injured inside the first like 11 minutes ended up like in the lead and ended up sort of feeling like, oh, this was our moment and we let it slip because they allowed that late equalizer. It's kind of crazy. And so all that to say that it's a team from Wales who don't have a huge population, who aren't like that like well regarded in English football or British football. And I think that's also always going to appeal to Americans. It's like a hard scrabbled club who are like now on their way up because of American / Canadian investment. And it's maybe like one of the feel good, hey, it's still exciting to be an American sort of stories when there's not a ton of national pride necessarily. So now I've made Wrexham into a patriotic story when maybe I shouldn't have. But I think for all those reasons, I don't begrudge anybody for watching Wrexham Sheffield and not watching, say, City Arsenal.
No, not at all. I mean, this is the power of stories, just period, but stories in sports in particular. I desperately hope, I saw a lot of this discourse, Ryan, and I sympathize with a lot of the people saying, you know, all these fans were hopping on the Wrexham bandwagon. There are American soccer teams that are under-supported around, right around where you live, most likely. Well, at least a portion of the reason why those teams are under-supported is because they don't tell stories, right? Or there's not enough motivation for people to change their current sports-consuming habits to go and follow a new team because they don't feel invested in that team. People feel invested in Wrexham. They feel invested in the story. And so this is why I desperately hope Apple and Major League Soccer are taking notes, because there's been, for me, there's been a little bit too much smoke around, you know, Apple TV and talk about team docu-series and all that stuff. For something not to be in the works at some point, it's probably not going to be this year. I would expect, this is not from anything I know, but just I feel like there's going to be something that comes down the pipeline here before too long. Yeah. In Major League Soccer. But I mean, this is the best example I could possibly think of. The best thing to tip Major League Soccer over to the other side and say, hey, we might look silly at times in this docuseries. People are going to make fun of us. People are going to make fun of this team and their players and whatever it is, but they're also going to get in. They're going to get invested and they're going to get excited about a team that they just straight up did not care about before. Wrexham and their story and the FA Cup and the people they have involved, all of those are like the best examples I could ever imagine to get a team or a league that's not on board with this kind of storytelling into that camp.
Yeah, I think you've totally hit the nail on the head there, Joe. And it's all about the storytelling of this team. I saw some discourse about how, you know, LAFC had a documentary.
Yeah.
And they've got Will Ferrell. They've got all these celebrity owners as well. Why aren't we paying attention to that? It's because they didn't have anything to say. They didn't have a story. Whereas if you look at Wrexham, they do have a story and they have a history. And I think what's important is, you see them warts and all. You see their downs as well as their ups.
100%.
Whereas in an American documentary series,
you don't get it.
Maybe even an MLS one, you would not see the warts. You would not see the downs. You would only see the ups. And what we want as fans is to see that it's a roller coaster. We want to see the lows and the highs. And I think that's what you get from, sorry, Taylor, that's what you get from something like the Wrexham documentary.
You don't need to apologize to me for interrupting you. I apologize to you. But I would say, I think, especially MLS, that is sort of the problem, is I think there is, especially in American soccer, in world soccer, but especially in American soccer, a fear that if we look like we don't know what we're doing, if we look like we're making mistakes, people aren't going to take us seriously. People will dislike us more than they already do. And there is some truth in that. But looking at Welcome to Wrexham for a moment, like, I have talked many times about how it's maybe not great that Rob McElhenney was going to Twitter to look for, like, who should they sign. But at the same time, there is an embracing of we don't know what we're doing, but we can try to make this work. And that's where, like, his conversation with Phil Parkinson that goes forever and he has to really sell him on the club is so captivating, because you're seeing a club desperately trying to get a manager that they think will be able to make a difference. And I think some teams in the United States wouldn't want to show that vulnerability. They wouldn't want to show that people don't actually want to coach here because we haven't done a very good job. And I think that's what makes it so compelling, is seeing people, like, the point of that story is we don't know what we're doing, but we want to make this club great, and we're going to try to find a way to make that happen. I think the first or second episode is them finding out that the pitch was mislaid, and now it's going to be another £200,000 to do it properly. No.
And by the
team,
way, the pitch looked terrible yesterday.
It did. But no team in the United States is going to want that to be public because, oh, we got it wrong. They don't know what they're doing. Somebody's got to be held accountable. And I think it's maybe taking itself a little bit too seriously. I think that's a huge part of it. And I think the other thing, not to go fully down this rabbit hole, is pro-rel.
Yep. That it's just, I knew it was coming.
They can go up. There it is. They can work their way up the pyramid. It made me, like, I don't think we're ever going to get full pro-rel. I think we will get a stage where MLS is so big that we will get some version of, like, MLS 1 and MLS 2. And it made me want to propose a thing of, like, if that's what they do, of anybody who wins the U.S. Open Cup gets put into, like, MLS 1, and that way you could have teams really, really go for it in that way, just for some way to get in, because I think that makes such a more interesting narrative.
It does indeed. My favorite comment that I saw on this subject, a tweet I saw, Rex until I die, or until a celebrity I like better buys a different team. Which is a good way of looking at it. But I appreciated it. I wanted to see this game. Yeah. I'd say a good indicator is my wife watched part of this game with me. And I never, ever get her to watch soccer. But because, oh, look, Paul Mullin's got a goal. Oh, look, there's Ryan Reynolds in the crowd. We've watched a documentary together. So it's brought us in there a little bit as well. So, yeah, best of luck to Wrexham. ESPN doing the full production with John Champion and everything. Yeah. All for it for me. So I like that.
Ryan, if you had to choose I'm assuming it would be Burrow, but if you had to choose between Middlesbrough, Sheffield, and Wrexham for where to live, where are you choosing to live and where do you least want to live of those three?
Oh, my God.
Now's the part of the show where Ryan makes people angry.
Yeah.
Wrexham's the furthest south, so I'll live there.
There we go. Perfect.
And they've also got a celebrity I like who owns their team.
There we go. All right, yeah, that makes sense. See, you're part of the problem, Ryan.
There we go. Sorry, Sean Bean and whoever's associated with Middlesbrough. Not for me. Anywho, yeah, let's move on from Wrexham. How about we talk about, very quickly, Brighton 2, Liverpool 1. The holders of the FA Cup are out at the fourth round stage. Second win for Brighton in 2 weeks over this particular team, Taylor. How about that winning goal, Kari Mitoma, with the goal of the round? Maybe not the goal of the weekend, we can get to that later, but the goal of the round to beat this one out.
Brighton, like, hired a wizard, I'm assuming. I don't know what Brighton have done to sort of, like, steal the youth away from Liverpool and other clubs. But, man, are they looking so, so strong. And you can sign their manager, you can sign their key players. They will just keep on keeping on. I thought they would be in trouble when they got rid of Cucurella, and yet here we are. They have not missed him very much at all. For them to knock out Liverpool, I think, is once again credit to the team, to De Zerbi, for what he has done in replacing Potter. But it is also another sort of sign of where Liverpool are, that there isn't going to be investment. Klopp once again ruled that out, that there's not going to be any additional spending in January. So they are who they are. They are where they are. And where they are is a team that looks like they are in need of a refresh, of a rebuild, of, I don't even know if they need new ideas, because I think Klopp is still going to be that manager and is still going to be that influential, charismatic figure, but I think they're just a team that has maybe gone as far as they can with some of the personnel they have. I think they will refresh. I think they will get stronger. I think they will be back, but it was telling to me that I saw that result and wasn't shocked that the holders were out, shocked that Brighton had knocked out Liverpool, but it felt more like, that kind of seems like how things are going.
And to do this without Moises Caicedo, who's angling for a move, we'll likely talk more about him later this week. If that move comes, maybe even if it doesn't come, we'll talk transfers as or after the transfer deadline is closed in most European leagues. But Caicedo wants a move, basically isn't going to train until that happens. I'm sympathetic with a lot of that. I think this is just a big example for Brighton of how good their talent identification has been. I mean, they've got Pervis Estupiñán at left back, gets an assist in this game. They've got Alexis McAllister in central midfield. I mean, so many underrated talents that are probably now more properly rated after the World Cup, maybe even at times bordering on overrated, but there's a lot of quality in this team. There's a reason why they're in sixth in the Premier League right now. There's a reason why they're taking down teams that spend way more than they do in competitions like the FA Cup. De Zerbi deserves a ton of credit. Those players deserve a ton of credit. Brighton has become, I think, genuinely one of the best stories in, certainly in England, maybe in European soccer right now.
Thumbs up for the Seagulls. Indeed. And sorry, Taylor.
We're missing Graham Ruthven, obviously. We should clarify that it's because in this game we had Billy Gilmore and Andy Robertson on the pitch at the same time, and that was just too much for him. He was overcome by the vapors. He needed some time to recuperate because he was just so overjoyed by the Scottishness of this game.
Too much stimulus. He's had a pleasure overload, so he needs to recover for at least another day.
It's like a small amount of pleasure is a pleasure overload for Graham.
Indeed.
A smile. Cracking a smile.
Man City 1, Arsenal 0, the Friday night game in the FA Cup. Nathan Ake with the goal for City. Thomas Partey and John Stones getting injuries in this one. Joe, any thumbs for this? Bear in mind, this comes before they meet each other twice in the league in February.
Yeah, so this is an American soccer show, or at least, you know, today it's mostly American. So the rule is, when there's a game, you have to pick the American on the losing team to talk about first, because that's just how this thing goes. You don't start with the winning team, you don't start with their strategy, you start with the losing team's American player. So with that in mind, thumbs up to Matt Turner, who I did think was good in this game. Mm-hmm. It's fun to see Matt Turner start against, like, one of the best teams in the world, and to have him have a pretty good game. He lets a goal in from Nathan Ake. I don't think there's anything he could do about that one. In general, I was pleased with Matt Turner's distribution. He still looks a little bit like a newborn deer who can't quite figure out how to use his legs. But genuinely, his distribution and his work on the ball has gotten a lot better at Arsenal. He still looks out of control, and I saw Stu Holden tweeting about this. You know, he said at the World Cup, Matt Turner, I guess to Fox or to somebody, you know, my teammates make fun of me because I look like I'm out of control, but things mostly are under control when I'm back there. So that's a paraphrase of the quote. But I think you can see that from Matt Turner if you go through and watch his actions from this game. Has a couple of nice saves, comes out and disrupts Erling Haaland on a sequence in the first half, and has some nice passes. Not perfect, but I did like Matt Turner. That's a thumbs up for me. A thumbs, like, middle to down. This is not about this game in particular, but it is a Man City thing that broke this morning. João Cancelo going to Bayern Munich, apparently, for the rest of the season. This, I might buy this as a Pep overthink more than I've ever bought a Pep overthink before. He doesn't start in this game. I don't think he plays in this game, João Cancelo. It's Nathan Ake who gets the goal, who's starting more on the left side. And so I guess in that way it worked. But I am baffled by the idea of losing the player that was so influential for you last season and still has so much talent to another team that is competing in the same Champions League that you are. It doesn't make sense to me, Taylor.
I think there's been rumors for a few days, sorry to jump in, Taylor, that he's not been getting along famously with Pep, has João Cancelo. Hmm.
But between that and the rumors that Kyle Walker might also be gone in this window, I think he's heavily linked with Fenerbahce in Turkey. That feels like an odd one because Kyle Walker still seems pretty, pretty good. But losing both of those, if that were to happen, would be another, I would say, worrying sign for Man City. But luckily, they only have to play Matt Turner maybe two more times. I doubt he plays either of those games. But I was really pleased with what I saw from Matt Turner, including his distribution. I thought for the most part, when he did go long, it was, I know this sounds like damning with faint praise, but I mean this sincerely. Like, it was to a player. It was just often Eddie Nketiah surrounded by City players, and I don't think it worked that well. But by contrast, Ederson, I think when he would go long in the direction of Haaland, I think once or twice he puts it right on Haaland's chest. A couple other times, it's just sort of in his vague vicinity. Turner is usually putting it right on the player. It's just that player is often immediately under fire. But when he comes off of his line in the first 22 minutes, I think he comes off his line twice to make some big plays. One is Rob Holding doesn't control a pass, and Haaland is suddenly through on goal. Turner is there, wins a slide tackle. The other one is Haaland is played, I think, vertically through Turner off his line again to win that one. And the first one, especially, I did not expect to see him coming up because of that misplay. It wasn't like, oh, I see what's happening here and I can sort of cheat and get ahead of it. He has to react when there's that mistake, and yet he still gets there in time. He still backs himself to win it. I thought that just showed a goalkeeper who is really confident. Oftentimes we talk about a player going somewhere to be the backup goalkeeper. We don't love it. But in this case, it seems like Turner is sort of developing his game in a way that I would have hoped for. So thumbs up to him for this one. I would say thumbs down to this match, broadly speaking. I wrote this in the notes. It's that strange phenomenon of two very good teams playing each other, but when it's two very good teams playing similar styles, it sometimes means a lower quality game. It makes me think of the Mitchell and Webb joke when he's pacing around the pitch, hyping up every single game from the weekend, and he drops the gem. The Giants of Charlton play host to the Titans of Ipswich, making them both seem normal-sized. And that was this game. It was basically two incredibly good teams sort of making it seem like two teams that were maybe giving the ball away a bit too much, maybe going vertical a bit too often. I think that's interesting that City tried to go direct to Haaland, because I think that's something they haven't done like always this season, and I think he's just such a unique threat, and he can bring it down with two defenders on his back. So I think there was some interesting little wrinkles in there, but for the most part, I thought this was a game that was more sort of back and forth, but in a, oh, they went long, oh, they went long, oh, they went long and gave it away. Oh, he tried to hold on to it and gave it away. It was just sort of stilted, disjointed, whatever it may be. I still thought it was really interesting, but I didn't think it was maybe as aesthetically pleasing as I was expecting it to be.
All right. Well, as I say, two more games between these two sides in the next month, so maybe they will suit your aesthetic desires a little better, Taylor. We should hope so. Tottenham getting a win there through as well with a 3-0 win at Preston. A goal on his debut for Danjuma in that one. Heung-min Son with a brace. Thumbs up to Son. He gave his coat to a ball kid. He won the internet in that game. Well done to him. Man United 3, Reading 1. Casemiro with two very nice goals. Two different but very nice goals. A chip and then a first touch from 200 yards out, I think it was.
Yep.
Very, very nicely done. Fred with a back heel. Goodness me, what was going on in this game? The highlight for me, Taylor, Paul Ince, Reading's manager, Man United legend, I guess we can call him, of sorts, subbing off the goalkeeper for non-tactical reasons, just to give the lad a run out, which I thought was brilliant in the FA Cup when he's at Old Trafford. Why not do that? And maybe a thumbs down for Andy Carroll for a red card for his second yellow for a tackle on Casemiro, which was almost a day late, it felt like.
Yeah, some rough challenges here. We have Eriksen also going off with injury. That's why Fred is on the pitch, and there is that red card to Andy Carroll. That said, when Andy Carroll was going into any challenge, I think this might be a red card. So I guess I wasn't that surprised by it. I did love the goals from Casemiro. I did love Fred getting in on the action. And I did love Paul Ince, who has the greatest note of all time. I reference this wherever I can. When they zoomed in on his notepad, he was taking notes during the game about what they needed to do differently. And the note simply said, shoot, with an underline. Yep. And that is terrific work by him. Almost as good as subbing off your goalkeeper.
Route one stuff. Gotta love Paul Ince. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about some continental games, including big losses in Serie A for Milan and Juventus. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's turn our attentions to Italy, where top of the table Napoli remain top of the table Napoli after a 2-1 win against Roma. Before this game, Tater, the Ultras, the Roma Ultras, they unveiled a banner outside the Colosseum that read Zaniolo traditore e merda senza onore. Zaniola is a traitor and a poop without honour, said this banner. He's not being impressed the fans very much. Basically tried to get a move away. I think he tried to go to Bournemouth. He tried to go somewhere else as well. And he basically has refused to play for the club. And Jose Mourinho has hung him out to dry for it. So yep. Zaniolo, basically, if you talk to people here, I've had a few conversations over the weekend.
He was chased by a mob. He was chased by a mob.
Literally, he is the biggest topic of conversation in Rome at the moment. They're obsessed with how much everybody hates him, Taylor.
What is it that, like, I don't know much about this story. I just saw that story, that he had been chased by the mob, the police were called, and I like the joke that the police then got out of their car and continued to chase along with the mob after Zaniolo, such was their frustration with him. Is it, I don't know much. Was he expected to be this, like, difference-maker player and just isn't doing well? Like, they had a similar situation with Rick Karsdorp, but that's a right back who I don't think is quite as highly regarded. Is it the money spent? Is it the wages? Has he been that bad? Is he turning and shooting into his own goal? What is provoking this ire?
I think there's a healthy dose of hindsight, because if I spoke to some Roma fans over the weekend and they're like, oh, we need to get rid of him. He's rubbish. I was like, was he rubbish before he didn't want to play for Roma? Just curious.
I'm going to guess no.
We're living in a simulation that a move from Roma to Bournemouth is a desirable one for any player. Once again, I think I said this sometime last week, the Premier League is the Super League.
I think maybe it was Milan as well he was linked with, so maybe that was a bit fiercer, the rumours there. But all the same, why don't we talk about Napoli? I don't know if anyone caught this game, but Victor Osimhen with, I'm going to call it the goal of the weekend, Joe.
That's an unbelievable moment. I'll talk through the goal in just a second. But it's hilarious that this comes from Cavaradonna. It seems like every time I watch Napoli play, you just cannot stop those two players from changing the game. It's ridiculous at this point, and maybe neither one of them will still be in Italy by the time next season kicks off, but it certainly looks like they're going to lift the trophy in Serie A this year. 92% chance for Napoli to win Serie A. 92%. It is January 30th, folks, as we're recording this. So crazy how big Napoli's lead has gotten. Even without Juve's point reduction, they would still be, you know, atop the table by a large margin. The goal, Cavaradonna plays the ball in from the left side of the box to Osimhen, who's on the right side of the box, over like five different Roma defenders, none of which can figure out how to get their head on a ball or a foot on the ball. And Osimhen, I believe, chests it. Then he hits it with his right thigh, and then he hits it with the top of his right foot. And shoot, I can't remember if he roofs it or not, but it thumps into the back of the net.
He roofs it.
Good. I don't think there was much aim, to be honest, involved on that shot. I think the thought process is, I'm going to hit the tar off of this ball. And he absolutely did. That is one of my favorite goals of the season so far. Just a lovely moment. That gets Napoli 1-0 up in this game. Then Roma come back and score. Napoli get the winner later on in this match. But man, yet another impressive moment of skill from Napoli's two best players, and another result for Napoli as they march towards the Serie A title.
Osimhen is so good at so many things, it's almost unfair. He's obviously smaller than Erling Haaland, but he has that same combination of ridiculous speed, but also strength, but also technical ability. The strength thing is the one that I tend to forget, but a number of times in this game, he just backs into a defender and knocks them back a good couple feet. He holds the ball up so well, especially on throw-ins. That seemed to be a thing that they would throw it into his feet, and then Cavaradonna would make that overlap or that underlap, and it would be a quick little combination, and away they go. But then obviously for the goal, the chest, the thigh, the volley, the roof, he's so good across the board. He's so much fun to watch. I really hope they don't get any sort of points deduction. Though, if they did get a 13-point deduction, that puts them, I think, neck and neck for a title race. So you never know. Maybe that could end up being interesting. But I thought this was just another very good game from Napoli, and the type of game that I think you look back on as being instrumental in their title challenge, because Roma very clearly okay with a draw. El Shaarawy comes on at halftime, gets the goal. It's Jose Mourinho's team basically doing Jose Mourinho things. It's playing defensively. It's getting the ball wide. It's lumping into the box. It's getting numbers there to make something happen. And in this case, it kind of bounces to El Shaarawy at the back post. He puts it in. And at that point, I'm thinking, credit to Jose. Like, he played a Jose game. He changed things up, and he got the point. And then Napoli come back. And Gio Simeone with the goal. It's a great little... I think it, like, his feigning left and then turning right is what throws Smalling off. The commentator suggested that they thought the ball was going out wide to Zielinski, and so Simeone threw them off that way. But either way, I think this turn is just so clever from him that he then is able to rifle that one into the back of the net. But it's a goal for Napoli that I think in seasons past, when they were theoretically challenging for the title or trying to run Juve close or Inter close, They fell in these moments. They would get these draws. They would get disappointing draws, or they would give up one at the end, and it just wasn't there, like, there to be. And in this case, that they kind of find a way through, especially against a Roma team who, after they equalize, have 9 outfield players behind the ball and are just content to defend and frustrate and foul as need be. Not a shot at Roma. It's just they're trying to get the point. They know where they are on the table. They know what they need, and they're doing what they can. But Napoli find a way through and find a way to win, and that seems to be the story of them this season. So a big old thumbs up for Osimhen, a big old thumbs up for Napoli for getting the win.
Yes, indeed. Thumbs up from me for the underdogs of Serie A, Sassuolo and Monza this weekend. Milan losing 5-2 at home to Sassuolo, their 4th defeat in 5, that was for Milan. So a lot of pressure on them at the moment. Sassuolo 16th in Serie A, so a massive shock loss there for Milan. And also for Juventus at home, 2-0 loss to Monza. Juve are down in 13th. Because of reasons as well as losses like this. You may remember, Taylor, in December, Monza's president, Silvio Berlusconi, remember him? Monza's president, Silvio Berlusconi, he promised Monza's player a bus full of members of the world's oldest profession if they beat either Milan or Juventus this season.
Oh, boy.
So the bus is coming.
I should have known that would be your major takeaway from the weekend. I wonder how publicized that will be, knowing Berlusconi, I'm going to guess,
very
fairly. Exactly. But man, that is that's quite the promise and quite the assumption that that's what everybody is into. But I guess he knows his players better than I do. Certainly.
As an amount of projection in that one, I think, Taylor.
I would guess, yes. It's like, I'm going to get it for my players, a.k.a. me, at my house. I'll be on that bus.
You could share my bus.
But man, not great times for Juve, especially losing Weston McKennie. I'm sure that's the one that everybody's truly upset about in Turin. But also this loss, coupled with the points deduction, coupled with the kind of vulnerabilities in the squad, not a great time to be a Juve fan. Definitely a better time to be a Monza fan. Questionably a better time to be a Monza player. Also, a thing that I continue to track after we got this Lister question, we still have no wins for Elche and no wins for Cremonese. So far, we made the prediction, we had to add the question, which team is more likely to go winless in the whole season? And I think we all said Elche was more likely to get a win. I believe that's what we said. No, we said Cremonese. I can't remember anymore. Joe, do you remember?
I do not remember, Taylor.
I think it was whichever one was closer. And I think La Liga was closer overall, so it felt like it was going to be harder to get points. But
shoot.
I might be wrong.
Let me see if I can find it.
Either way, they both remain winless, so it doesn't really matter yet.
Marvelous. Let's quickly move over to La Liga. Barcelona getting a 1-0 win over Girona. Pedri with the goal once again on his 100th Barca game. He made his debut, I looked this up, in September 2020, 100 games since then. So, yeah, that's quite a lot of games, I guess, for Pedri.
Elche more likely to go winless. There we go.
There it is. There it is.
Okay. Thank you for the update there.
I know you were really worried.
So who else is winless this weekend? Real Madrid. Real Sociedad, a 1-1 draw in that one. Sociedad escaping, Taylor, with a draw. I think we can call that 20 shots from Madrid to Sociedad's 7 in this one. Opened up the gap at the top of the table. Real now 5 points behind the aforementioned Barcelona.
Indeed. And it's a reminder of what it's like to have those two as kind of that two-horse race. Some questions about if La Real could potentially be title contenders for Ancelotti. He said he thinks it's a little bit too soon for that. But the narrative seems to be Real Madrid like having a terrible, disastrous January. And I looked it up and they lost to Barca and they drew this game. I think they also maybe lost a cup game, but I don't know how important that one was. But I think they're 5 points behind, 18 of 36 games played. So there's still plenty of time. They lost two in January, drew one. It's not great, but I kept expecting the narrative to then be like, okay, so they're going to reinforce, they're going to make their team much stronger, they're going to bring in a player or two to kind of push them over the hump to get them back into the form they need to. I was sort of surprised to realize how little Real Madrid have done in the past three transfer windows. Zero signings in 2021. They signed Camavinga for 31 million euros and David Alaba on a free the following season. Then Tchouameni for 80 million and Rudiger on a free this past window. Not a ton of money being spent. They've spent 111 million euros since the 2019-2020 season. That's when they brought in Hazard and the like. But they've sold a total of 175 million in players. So Real Madrid doing well to balance their books. It just means that they have to do things like play Eduardo Camavinga as a left back, which happened in this game. It's happened previously. It happened in 2021. Things went poorly. That's when they lost to Sheriff Tiraspol in the Champions League. They went all out attack. It did not work. But Dani Carvajal is injured. Ferland Mendy is injured. Lucas Vazquez, David Alaba also out. So a lot of potential fullbacks not able to play. So in came Camavinga, and he did fine. He was dribbled past four times, 5 for 12 in duels, positioning off a number of different times when it came to the defensive side of things. But I think when you play Eduardo Camavinga at left back, it's much more about the attack, and he is very involved. He gives, I think, because he's on the side with Vinicius. Ancelotti talked about this. Our left back needs to play more inside than outside. Camavinga does that well. So it's basically using him as an interior attacker so that Vinicius has just sort of room to operate, freedom to cook. And that's mostly how this game went, except that they didn't get any point or the full 3 points. Benzema failed to score. I don't know what the concerning part is, right? Exactly.
I was just about to say, Taylor, honestly, I think it's all credit to all of us that we still showed up for work today. Benzema didn't score.
Right.
Things are weird. Things are wrong. It doesn't feel great today, but I guess we press on.
The TSS flag is at half mast. Whenever Karim Benzema fails to score on a weekend, we do lower the flag for one day.
Indeed. Mm. Bayern's flag at half mast as well, Tater. Mm-hmm. I think at the moment, only draws they seem to be capable of. Bayern Munich 1, Eintracht Frankfurt 1. Bayern's fourth tie of the year in all competitions, their third Bundesliga draw of 2023. Where do we put our thumbs, Joe, for Bayern's performance this weekend?
Okay, so I want to put my thumbs up for the Bundesliga title race more than anything, to be honest. I don't have a lot of thumbs generated in Bayern's direction, but I guess this is a thumbs up towards Bayern as well for their performance in this game and this season. There is still something of a title race. I know I talk about the Bundesliga being broken. I still generally believe that it is broken, but there are four teams within 3 points of Bayern Munich at the top of the table. That's one game that could conceivably put, you know, four teams level with Bayern on points at the top of the Bundesliga. I love that, and I do appreciate Bayern Munich maybe underwhelming slightly in moments like this, so they can save up for the Champions League that's coming up later in February. They can save up for their late season push and let us sort of enjoy this toy that's been dangled in front of us. I do appreciate that. I want to give thumbs up to a couple Eintracht-related things in this match. First of all, thumbs up to Randall Kolo Muani, who scores a lovely goal. It's not as good as Victor Osimhen's goal, but has a really nice moment in the 69th minute of this game. It's an equalizer after Leroy Sané's goal in the 34th minute for Bayern. Muani receives the ball on the left side of the box with the outside of his right foot, and he just sort of holds and holds and holds and waits. Dayo Upamecano comes out and matches up against him, and then once Muani finds the right moment, the moment that he's happy with, he takes a big touch towards goal with the inside of his right foot. So it's outside, 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 big touch towards goal with the inside of his right foot, and then hits a lovely hard shot to the bottom right corner of the goal with his left foot. It's a perfect goal. It's like a goal that you get scored. It's a goal that's scored on against you in Sunday League as a defender where you just like don't feel good afterwards. You don't feel good about yourself. You don't feel good about your performance. It's a lovely goal for Muani. I like him a lot. The other thumb that I want to give for Eintracht is, I think, thumbs up to their pocketbooks. I think Randall Kolo Muani is going to make them a lot of money. He was heavily linked towards Manchester United earlier in the transfer window. Wout Weghorst seems to have been that player instead. But, I mean, Bayern have been linked to him. I don't know when or if that's going to happen. But I would be surprised if Randall Kolo Muani is in the Bundesliga, or at least is in the Bundesliga for a team not named Bayern Munich, for too much longer. Yeah. I think he's a good player. I don't know if he's a great player, but I think he's a good player, and moments like this show, moments like the one he had against Bayern this weekend, show how good he can be.
Yeah, Joe, I think you did a good job of covering your bases, so maybe we haven't cursed them entirely. But that does feel like the announcement comes tomorrow that Bayern Munich have agreed to a pre-contract deal with him. So hopefully that does not happen. As we've talked about already, João Cancelo seems likely to end up at Bayern. That does feel like a signing they need. They also have some fullback issues and some defensive issues. I think they had 3 17-year-olds on the bench, only one of them playing in this game. And that is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think it does show you that there is not quite the depth that we would have expected for Bayern Munich, so I think João Cancelo could be a difference maker, and then obviously they'll reinforce in the summer. But I was surprised to see, amongst those 17-year-olds, there's an Ibrahimovic, not related to Zlatan, though. A 17-year-old Ibrahimovic, I thought maybe he's got a son that we've never heard about, but alas, no. I was surprised by that. I was surprised that Daley Blind signed for Bayern Munich without me noticing that, shocked to see him on the bench. Also shocked to see John Brooks starting for Hoffenheim.
Yeah.
Joe, that was not one that I saw happen. I knew that he had left Benfica, did not know that he had ended up in Hoffenheim, but he starts in a loss for them this weekend versus Gladbach.
John Brooks about to be Tim Ream for 2026, baby. Book it. Book it right now.
I will not book that.
Fair enough.
let's book the weekend review instead, shall we? Taylor Rockwell, a pleasure as always conversing with you about all things weekend.
Except for the first segment and the first half of the second segment. I believe you, Ryan.
Correct. Thank you. Joe Lowry, thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, right back at you, Ryan.
And listener, thank you very much for joining us on this journey. Patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow if you want to have a little more fun. We've got a great Discord on there and much, much, much more bonus content. We'll be back on the feed shortly, including with that USMNT-themed Tuesday show. But for now, bye!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.